Hi, this is Pat Gelsinger, CEO of VMware, and you are listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast.
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 57. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero, and joining me back from VMworld 2017 is Mr. John Nicholson. John, welcome back to America.
Welcome back to America. I feel like you need to play a clip from... was it Welcome to America? What was the movie?
My clips don't go that deep. I don't have Welcome to America clips just hanging on my board.
No, what was the movie?
Coming to America?
Yeah, Coming to America.
Yeah, I don't have any Coming to America clips, John. But hey, the good news is we do have a ton of clips. Man, we captured so many great conversations this week. We did it at Vegas as well. I've still got a lot of really great content that we're going to share throughout the year that we captured in Vegas. But again, we had some really good conversations in Barcelona as well. A lot of them were around the announcements, as you might imagine. We had Frank Dennerman talking about the announcement that we are now GA, finally, with VMware Cloud on AWS. We also had a chance to talk to one of the VPs over at Pivotal, which I thought was really exciting, James Waters, and he talked a lot about the whole PKS thing. And then I think one of the ones I was looking forward to was a conversation with one of the very first architects of vSAN, one of the main vSAN guys, Christian Dickman. So it was good catching up with him as well. All right, so let's do this. Let's start with Frank Dennerman, who spoke to us about VMware Cloud on AWS. Take a listen. All right, well, joining us once again, no stranger to the podcast, Mr. Frank Dennerman. Frank, welcome back, my friend.
Thank you for having me on my favorite podcast.
He's so kind.
Are you sure we're not your number two favorite podcast?
No, for today, you're number one.
Today. I'll take it. So, Frank, last time we spoke to you, we were talking about VMware Cloud on AWS, and it wasn't released yet. We were talking about, sort of conceptually what it was. Then at VMworld, we talked to Pat Gelsinger and Michael Dell, actually, about VMware Cloud on AWS. They gave us the high level, sort of the value prop.
Yeah.
But we want to get the guys that can talk some details with us, and that's where you come in.
Well, actually, that's an interesting thing, right? Because we all have to change a little bit. We're infrastructure people.
Yeah.
So we like to talk feeds and speeds. But in reality, it's a service. And the whole idea of this is that with VMware Cloud and AWS, we take care of the feeds and speeds.
Yeah.
So the hardware, the stuff, the patching, software updates, you basically become a resource consumer. That's right. The only thing you need to do when you do VMware Cloud and AWS. Of course, there's more, but the overall idea is, the generalization is, we just give you the resource to consume, you consume it.
But my point is, this is marketed towards VMware administrators that are already managing on-premises, possibly, environments, and now they're going to take advantage of this offering, VMware Cloud on AWS. How does that differ from what I'm already managing on-premises?
Well, nothing, and that's the beauty, because now you can consume cloud-based resources with your current tool set and your current skill set, right? So it doesn't change anything. You log into your trusty vCenter, and if you connect those two with a hybrid link mode, you get and I know a lot of people don't want to hear this, but a single pane of glass.
Sure.
Right? And you can manage it from one environment that you already are very familiar with. And I think that's the brilliant part of things, right? So now you can start to think, okay, which application do I want to run where, right? Do I want to run on-prem or do I want to run it in cloud? So you have to, this is one of the things that people need to invest time in right now, is look at your current application landscape and figure out which application is suitable for which location. Do you want to run it closer to your production site on-prem, or is it general enough I can run it in cloud? From a hardware perspective, the thing is brilliant, right? It's if we want to talk feeds and speeds, we've got 3D6 cores in a host, 512 gigs of memory, and we're doing an all-flash vCenter array, 25 gigs of network, that's one host. You have four hosts, so do the math, right? So you have 144 cores, you got 2 terabytes of memory, you got 10 terabytes of raw capacity from a storage perspective. Depending on your storage policy, depends whether or not you're going to consume a lot or you're going to consume less because you can use RAID 5 as an erasure coding. Now, the thing is, it can run everything, right? So it's not like, is this offering good enough for me? Maybe my application is too...
Yeah, people aren't going to ask you about performance. That was coming to me earlier. You know, 2 years ago, people were saying, well, can vSAN handle my workload? And now they're concerned about lifecycle. They're concerned about operations and how they consume it, not will it...
Yeah.
Can it handle my database?
Yeah, it's not like, is this application suitable for cloud? Well, yeah.
This is probably faster than the hardware you have in your 3-year-old host you have.
Exactly. So you now can think about, hey, can I consolidate as well, right? Because we are running vCenter and we're running just your normal format, just a VM, right? You don't have to refactor anything, right? So just move them. Just migrate them. So with a vMotion at one point, not currently... supported in the initial availability. We do only do cold migration.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Okay.
But at a later phase, in future release, we're going to do vMotion capabilities. From that point on, it's just basically migrating your data center. So if your CTO has a strategy of a data center zero model, where you basically go out of the business of operating your own data centers,
yeah,
it's just a vMotion. You could do it on the fly. You could do it in daytime hours. So think about a project, right? Think about all the migration projects that you've done where you talk to your application owners and you're like, okay, when is the time when I can move this VM to that new array, for example? That took time. Now it's just basically a vMotion. And I think that's really... Now, on top of that, on top of all this goodness,
mm-hmm.
we have a partnership with AWS, meaning that we started to develop our software together with AWS to make it fit on AWS infrastructure. So, for example, the ESXi hosts are connected to the network, the Amazon network, the VPC.
Okay.
Right? And we make with NSX, it makes that transparent. So basically, you don't see it, right? But because we are...
So you can stretch layer 2 into the same AZ, or you can just bridge the network in general. Is it routed? Is there a boundary there?
There's a lot to discuss about network.
We may need a whole show on...
Yeah, so...
When you mentioned that migrate, I'm like, is that the vCloud hybrid connector piece that we used to have? Is that some of that IP, the WAN acceleration on the copy
so
that are migrated?
It's a future release, so I cannot comment on this. The only thing that I can recommend you to do is invite Ray Wudavari.
Okay.
To talk about networking on VMware Cloud and AWS.
Oh, that'd be great.
He is the lead on that one.
Okay.
Right?
So one quick one on networking. Maybe you can answer this. I have seen on Twitter some people asking about costs for networks. So if you're within the same AZ between VMware Cloud on AWS and, say, an EC2 instance or some PaaS, that transit is... What's the pricing on that?
That changes with Amazon every time, right? So that's difficult to actually talk about the flavor of the day. But that was actually the point what I was getting at. The thing is, because we have this connectivity with AWS and we develop our networking software NSX together with AWS to make it work on their VPC, what we have is something that nobody else has.
You don't have to do the direct connect, peering.
If you want to do a hybrid cloud, you can do direct connect. But the real interesting thing is, and that is the future stuff, is that now we can directly go into services, native cloud-native services from AWS without going to the internet. So think about this. If you have an application landscape that connects to an S3 bucket or talks to a EC2 instance...
You're not going to have to do a VPN to it.
Nothing. This is the key.
And it's secure, too. It's not just going over the public.
And fast.
Yeah.
And cheap.
Well, that's the key, right?
Yeah.
So the thing is, it's fast. Why? Because it's on the same network. Right? It doesn't incur egress cost.
Yeah, data has gravity, and we've got to move compute to the data where it is. And for customers who have large data sets in AWS,
yes,
this is how you move the compute next to it.
So think about this. Think about this offering, and that's the beauty. First of all, we are allowing customers to manage their data center from a resource management perspective. That's first. They don't have to deal about restructuring their data center every 3 years. They just basically...
They don't have to do with lifecycle.
Exactly.
They don't have to do with patching, firmware, any of that stuff.
So you have that first. So the CTO says, we need to do cloud. Hey, I can do this right now with my current skill set. I don't have to go to follow any course. I don't have to to basically spend hours and hours learning this trick because I've been doing this for 10 years.
Exactly.
Right?
That's the beauty.
That is the beauty. So the second thing is there's no risk involved in a way that typically when you move to a different platform, you have to refactor your application.
Yeah, replatform all the apps.
Does it work? Is it performing enough?
Is it available? Just an EC2 instance on its own. I mean, the SLA is what, 3 nines or something? So
think about that. Like, okay, what do I need to know to actually make this work again on the same level as it is working right now in my current data center?
Yeah.
Right? Now, it's really sexy to talk about cloud native stuff, and it's really sexy to talk about microservices and all these things. But the reality is we have customers with more than 10,000 applications. They're not going to refactor every application.
And that little app that, you know, seven people use in accounting, like, I'm sorry, Janice, we're not going to spend $3 million, you know, containerizing it.
We have like 20 developers for your application, right? So you want to move these things over, move away from your own data center or use a hybrid solution or whatever. Now, and the third part is you're getting new application landscape cheaper, right? So if you have a VM, and this is what you see typically, you have a VM running on vSphere that connects to an S3 bucket or an EC2 instance due to the application landscape, but you have a lot of cost. Hey, data gravity, like you said, right? Move it to your VMC. It's closer by. It's performing better, less cost with your current tool set and skill set.
Well, sweet, Frank, that is awesome here. I'm so glad that this is actually coming to life now. You know, we've been hearing about it for a little while. It's exciting to see that we're here and we can actually start kicking the tires on this. So we'll get you back in real soon, man. Anytime you want to come on, you know you have an open invite to the Virtually Speaking podcast.
Awesome.
Friend.
Thank you, man.
All right. Take care.
Yeah. So always great catching up with Frank. I actually saw Frank and Niels, man. They were pretty busy at VMworld Europe. They were signing books, the Host Resources Deep Dive. I think they said they signed close to 1,000 copies just in Barcelona. So they're pretty busy. If you haven't gotten your copy of that book yet, be sure to go to Amazon and look for vSphere 6.5 Host Resources Deep Dive. That's definitely a great book. But yeah, always awesome catching up with Mr. Frank Dinnerman.
You know what I really love about Frank is one thing he's brought up repeatedly. In fact, I think he did a Twitter poll, was how long from when you decide you need more hosts in your data center till you can get them purchased, racked, deployed, configured, and all these things. A lot of people focus on once it's in the rack, oh yeah, I've got these auto deploying, these magical scripts, you know, whatever. Yeah. But the actual from the I think I need another host to like that whole procurement cycle and all the people and the checks and the loading docks and the, I got to get the structured cabling teams.
Yep.
And just rather than, you know, boom, 15 minutes later, here's a bunch of hosts.
Oh, I completely agree.
It's a great story.
Definitely is. It's funny how we started the conversation with, hey, give us some speeds and feeds. And he's like, yeah, sure. But that's not really what it's about here. We really are making this. This is infrastructure as a service. And so emphasis on the service part of it, which I thought was pretty cool. The other conversation we have for you, which I thought was exciting, was we got a chance to catch up with one of the VPs from Pivotal. You might remember last week they made the announcement at VMworld around the partnership with Google and Pivotal and VMware. And so we had a chance to catch up with Jim Waters to tell us all about this new Pivotal Container Service. Here's Jim.
All right, John, day two at VMworld Barcelona, and we now have with us one of the VPs over at one of our sister companies, Pivotal, James Waters. How you doing, James?
Hey, great. Here in Barcelona, it's packed. Bustling halls of VMworld. Amazing times talking to customers about PKS.
Yeah, exactly. PKS. So PKS, new to me. It's Pivotal Container Service, but containers is spelled with a C and PKS is with a K. So that's, I guess, my first question for you.
Why the K?
Yeah.
Why the K? That'll work.
So the core of Pivotal Container Service is something called Kubernetes, which was originated at Google to bring the patterns of their Borg engine to developer container management. So a developer-friendly Borg engine. And so when we built our container service, we thought homage to the Kubernetes core with PKS was fun. Google does the same thing. Google Container Engine is GKE instead of GCE.
Makes sense.
It's a good icebreaker at parties, explaining that.
This is reminding me of like the Unix naming conventions of yet another, you know, whatever it was.
Yeah.
So we had Pat Gelsinger on last week, and he was telling us about the announcement at VMware around Pivotal, VMware and Google.
Yeah.
So I think that might be a good place to start because I know that's all based on Kubernetes. So what's the 2-minute version of that announcement?
Yeah. So, you know, a good friend of mine, Justin Ehrenkrantz, was an architect at Bloomberg. He was exploring Kubernetes and he was telling me what he liked about the APIs. And he also understood a system we had called Bosch, which is very good at deploying distributed systems in production and updating them. And he said, what I'm really struggling with in Kubernetes is deploying them for my clients when they need them on demand.
Right.
And then also updating them. Right now I have to bring in consultants to do a Kubernetes upgrade. Mm. But when you kind of, you know, get deep in the Kubernetes community, you realize that they're constantly shipping updates to the software as if it's SaaS software. And in Google Container Engine, which is SaaS, you just host it, you just get those. But in the entire VMware and private infrastructure world, no one had ever accomplished that. Everything was hand-installed, you know, kind of consultant configuration.
Works on this build, but yeah, it's like you got to align the stars of compatibility across the stacks.
That's it, and it's kind of like this public cloud versus private infrastructure you know, diffusion paradigm where we need more of the patterns that have been successful in public cloud available as software. And that's where the Kubo open source project began, which was Google and Pivotal collaborating on our Bosch technology to deploy and update Kubernetes.
Okay, okay.
And then that kind of met Justin's sniff test. He's like, I like this. I'm going to go use it. And I said, okay, then let's go maybe think of productionizing that for a broader set of customers. And, you know, Google and VMware and everyone showed up. And because it was really about bringing those public cloud patterns to every private infrastructure, VMware was a critical partner.
Okay.
And so the idea was, like, we would just bake this, you know, engine into vSphere over time so that anyone that wanted a continuously updated container service could have one. And kind of without VMware, it's a little bit less exciting, you know, because until you see the vibrancy of this community and this buyer network and how much people trust in their infrastructure is in VMware and the vSphere brand, like, you have to be close to that and part of that to really make this work. And so it's pretty incredible that VMware has now put, you know, half of the engineering force behind this.
Yeah.
Well, and this is, I'd always heard with containers, some of the biggest challenges historically, you know, beyond security and other things people talk about was around lifecycle.
Yeah.
And having this same, and it's great to consume things from public cloud as a PaaS format, but if it's proprietary, it's only in that cloud, that service, that limits the extensibility. But being able to have beautiful lifecycle for containers in public and in your existing, you know, data center, that's magic.
Because I think on security and, you know, cost, frankly, manageability and control, private data centers are still, you know, the number one way to go. What some of the public clouds had was more of a developer-ready orientation. So they had APIs that were there to consume.
Developer-ready infrastructure.
Yeah, it's a good term. I like it.
Yeah.
And so bringing PKS to vSphere is really a developer-ready layer on top of the vSphere APIs. And being able to stand up and manage that is exciting. And so it's like, well, why not my private infrastructure for my developers too?
Yeah.
And these new projects?
No, that's good. Okay. That'll keep you from stranding anything anywhere. You can then start choosing your deployment model based off of location based on, you know, where the data is or other factors.
That's exactly right. I just had lunch with a big client that's like, hey, we were using Amazon for sandboxing, but then it was kind of a big migration to bring it back because it's a totally different operating model, different APIs. I think PKS really starts to make that pretty no-brainer.
Yeah, so Amazon obviously has a very large customer base, different use cases, but that developer community is just one part of that.
Yeah.
And I can see how PKS is sort of an equal fit for that, right? This is that the main customer base that you're looking at because of the whole Bosch portion? So it's software management, software...
Application lifecycle management.
Application lifecycle management. So that's the...
I think the cool thing about Kubernetes is it does that well, but it actually runs a lot of things really well. So, you know, a lot of people in their DevOps environment are standing up an Elk stack. Like, have you heard people standing up an
Elastic,
Elk stack?
Elastic, Surge, logs.
Yeah. So there's this cool thing happening in the Kubernetes community. There's an operator, which is an extra app that watches your Elastic cluster that runs inside the Kubernetes APIs. And so now everyone who's got an Elk stack problem, PKS is a big solution to that. And that's what excites me about PKS is it's actually a very generalized infrastructure with an interesting ecosystem of ISVs coming to it. So you're like, oh, hey, I want to stand that up as a container service. Oh, I've got a push-button way of doing that. I think over the next couple of years, that's going to be bigger and bigger. And so it's going to be a pretty interesting ecosystem.
People like platforms. So.
Yeah, and it's a platform that's not just about custom applications. It's actually a platform that every packaged ISV in the world could come to.
This is what I love about VMworld, though, is that... While it is very much, you know, the heart of the infrastructure industry as a trade show, there are, you know, people dealing with development challenges. There's people dealing with all kinds of different challenges that are higher up the stack,
yeah,
closer to the application. where, you know, Pete and I go to a lot of conferences, a lot of times when you're around infrastructure people, they're not necessarily thinking about that next level. But a lot of the people here, a lot of the customers are, you know, they're thinking about that full stack challenge. So
yeah, I mean, my background is spent 8 years at Sun Microsystems, which is an infrastructure company for sure.
Yeah, OS, rest in peace.
Yeah, tore one out. Larry put a shell in it the other day.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
And then I went to VMware, but I've always enjoyed kind of watching where workloads affected infrastructure design. Because as an infrastructure guy, you're like, well, how do I get ahead?
Mm-hmm.
And it's always been instructive to me to say, like, well, if we're the best at this workload, like Sun was the best at Oracle.
Right.
Like, that was our trick.
Yep.
We ran Oracle on symmetric multiprocessing better than anyone. And it took a decade to kill us after we started dying because we were so good at that.
Yeah.
And so I'm an infrastructure person, but I like to have an unfair advantage of understanding some workloads to then design the infrastructure and get ahead of the competition. And with the original Cloud Foundry project, we kind of got the best Java engine in the world with Spring Boot. We ran that. And so now as we're working on PKS, I'm watching all these communities of workloads that are evolving. Like Spark is being optimized for the Kubernetes infrastructure. Elastic is everywhere. That's optimized.
What's really interesting is I keep hearing these various, depending on which analyst you listen to, it seems every year there's a Blink is going to kill VMware. For a while there was OpenStack, and then it was containers, and we're all going to run containers on bare metal, and it's all about scale and squeezing everything. And it's been, you know, I shook my head, you know, on both of those accounts. But it's been interesting seeing how, you know, the focus is on, you know, actually having this stuff operational and deployable for grown-ups and taking care of problems rather than these.
I mean, I think after Clayton Christensen wrote In Innovator's Dilemma, there was a lot of people who just walked around everywhere going like, that's going to happen to you. You know, like kind of like everything was an innovator's dilemma. It got a little boring, you know, coffee conversation. That was all people could say. And I think VMware is point blank, both with its Amazon Cloud announcement. Everyone loves that.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone wants
the
same software, but on-demand hardware. They love that paradigm.
Oh, yeah.
And then I think everyone's loving PKS. Like, the feedback has been incredible. The idea that you can have this container management system baked into vSphere is exactly what people want. And so I think, you know, VMware has hard-won unfair advantages in terms of trust and infrastructure folks.
Absolutely.
And engineering execution that aren't going away and have it. So they were the only company we really wanted to partner with on this. I mean, not to pick on OpenStack, but I think that was supposed to be this phenomena, and it's definitely in.
Well, there's like a, you know,
I'm trying to be gentle here.
Yeah.
Well, so I think there's been a lot of hype around this is going to change the world to VMware's detriment and continued execution.
Hasn't happened yet.
No.
Yeah, who's making revenue off it? Who's actually operationalizing?
It's the year of OpenStack.
God, this sounds like the year of the Linux desktop, you know?
Yeah, but think how dangerous the VMware infrastructure people can be when they can provide this container API. It's going to have this new set of ISVs on top of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this one of the challenges I saw when containers first came out was it actually reminded me of the early days of virtualization. So as a, you know, infrastructure guy, the networking team comes to you and says, okay, why are there 50 MAC addresses behind this port? Did you plug a switch in? And like, no, it's a virtualization host. And I'm running VMs. And they're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
What is going on here? Well, the container guys are doing it to the virtual admins. It's, you know, flash forward, you know, 15, 20 years here. And they're, wait, why does this VM have 100 MAC addresses? What are you do? What unnatural things are going on in there? And I love this whole concept of providing visibility and lifecycle into that. So that way these container hosts don't become these black boxes of weird, oh, God, someone built a three-tier app with no security or anything like that.
No, I think it's important for infrastructure's waterline to keep going up so that like the independent project teams aren't reinventing infrastructure when they're trying to add business value.
Yeah.
And that, you know, to your point around networking, the NSX integration here is super exciting for me because everyone I talk about container management, they're like really hard to stand up in version, attacking that. And then the networking is a black box over top of the other stuff we're doing. So we're like, well, what if NSX just was baked into PKS?
When compliance requirements on networking are only getting worse every year with every next generation of rules and things.
Yeah, I was talking to a client last week, which has Kubernetes rolled out, but they had just a very flat network because they didn't understand how to actually do more than that. And how to manage that.
They've got a /8 or something, you know, 4 million addresses.
One giant cluster. But the NSX angle there was super important to them.
Yeah, I see that. That makes sense. All right, well, listen, we're not going to take too much of your time, but we would love to invite you to come back. Honestly,
Kubernetes is exciting, but I want more 101 conversation with you. Like,
yeah, I mean, I'll just leave the teaser on Pivotal is like, hey, this world of CI/CD and continuous delivery affects business, development, DevOps, and infrastructure patterns. Like, if you start trying to go continuous delivery, you can change all of those.
Yeah.
And Pivotal has really been the leading software and services company to stand at the center of that change. So, love to come back and talk anytime.
Awesome. Great. Thanks for coming, James.
And cheers.
All right.
It's really exciting to see just the final like concentration around Kubernetes and, you know, Bosch and actually having a real ecosystem, something that's actually got some life cycle, something that's not just a science for experiment and containers. I made a, you know, that passing joke about unikernels and whatnot. I mean, as we saw kind of as, you know, the dust settles on OpenStack, sometimes something gets a lot of hype, but then like it never fully gets operationalized by grownups, so to speak, and brought into, you know, mainstream production. And it's good to see that things are actually kind of consolidating here with this offering to take care of that problem.
Agreed. We definitely need to rope him back into a much deeper conversation around Pivotal and what they're doing with this Kubo. I thought that was new for me, and it was pretty exciting. Now, the last interview we have for you is somebody that's on the vSAN team. He's one of the main architects at VMware. John, you might know the answer to this, but I think he was one of the main guys that actually started the initial design of vSAN, correct?
I mean, he's been around a long time. So, I mean, yeah, he was around from the beginning, as well as also even prior to that, the internal private clouds used for automated testing and all kinds of things. Dickman's been a key part of all of this from the beginning.
Yeah. All right, well, take a listen to our conversation with vSAN architect, Mr. Christian Dickman.
Christian, welcome to the podcast.
It's great to be here.
So for those of you that don't know Christian, you can follow him on Twitter at cdickman, and that's D-I-C-K-M-A-N-N, double N there. That's the part I always miss.
Yes, I'm German. There's a double N.
Nice.
You guys get the bonus letters. I want a bonus letter.
A bonus letter. So Christian, for the benefit of the audience, why don't you tell us what you're doing at VMware?
Well, that's a non-trivial question.
So what is it you do here?
I'm the architect for the vSAN development team, and my main focus is on the management stack. So anything the user directly interacts with, all the plumbing to get the data path to be exposed, anything of that sort. But really, I'm trying to pick up wherever, you know, we can improve, wherever we see an opportunity to do something different, something better, and have been doing this for the last 7 years in vSAN, and, you know, last 10 years at VMware.
7 years, you've been in vSAN from the very beginning. Then, right?
Yeah. Day one.
Yeah. I remember when I first met you, we were talking about, you know, kind of the early days. And I think I remember you talking about servers, like, you know, the initial test builds were running on servers on someone's kube farm. And I think something about running the DHCP leases out on PromC.
Oh, yeah. That wasn't vSAN. This was our R&D cloud.
And, oh, that was the early days of Nimbus, right?
Yes. So we did break a number of systems. And that's good. It means you're doing something.
Yeah, exactly.
I love Christian's tweets because sometimes I'm like, what is he up to? Like, I'm trying to win my match. I'm like, wait, he's containerizing Grafana. What? Oh, God.
Well, that's the pity, right? I think I'm doing a whole bunch of interesting work that I really can't talk about. And then, you know, come VMworld, all the marketing people take over and talk about it. And I don't get to talk about it.
Yeah, we don't actually do anything. We just fly, drink, and talk.
Well, I did see your session last year. You did a session on futures. And right. I was telling John last week, the cool thing about that session was that, you know, now a year later, all that stuff is now in vSAN, like vSphere Update Manager.
Shipped,
right.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, we basically say we can't promise anything that we're going to show, but we're serious about this stuff. And so, you know, we actually, this was very nice. We managed to get everything that we demoed to actually be in the shipping product before the next VMworld.
That's so perfect.
Now we have a full set of, you know, six new things that we're demoing this year, and, you know, we'll see when we're going to deliver this or ever.
Challenge accepted. Game on.
Right, so you do have another future session this week, right?
Yes.
Yeah, this will be out after VMworld, so if you're listening to this, go ahead and just Google vSAN management, current and futures, and I think the session number is STO1378. That'll be worth a watch.
And Duncan, as always, did a live, really nice summary of it, so
nice.
That's a pretty cool thing.
They call those mind map, right? Did he do one of those?
Yeah, he just, like, when the Q&A started, it was already up. I don't know how he does it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So why don't you give us a little teaser? What are some of the things that we can possibly expect in the futures for vSAN?
Well, so, you know, what's the bigger theme, right? The bigger theme is that we are looking at ease of management across the whole spectrum, right? It's not just vSAN. It's really...
It's not just an HCI problem. It's a total platform problem.
Think about HCI first, right? You have vSphere, you have vSAN, you have the hardware, And on top, you have things like NSX and vRealize.
Yep.
The ultimate goal is to make it easy to manage this whole stack as one thing. And you know, we call this appliance-like experience. So what we're, and this is actually the same thing that we said last year, right? But what we're showing this year is really a progress around doing firmware patching for the whole box. You know, all the things around BIOS, NICs, not just vSAN components, but the whole system, and being able to patch the whole thing through VUM, through one central engine that we have, and combine it with software updates, make it automated so that the user doesn't need to configure what he wants, but we just look up the HCL and we know what the user needs.
Man.
And those kind of things. So that's one. We make it much, much easier to set up vSAN in the first place, like set up the combination of HA, DRS, VDS, VMKDs, all that stuff. Just make it a simple, you know, one single workflow to set up everything.
Sure.
So that's one big aspect of it. And then we're showing how we do analytics and how we do performance analytics, how we do, you know, a different support experience, get away from log bundle collection.
And, people don't like being asked to upload 27 terabytes on a 56K modem while they're down.
I wouldn't say so.
Yeah, no, it's...
I think there's a lot we can do on that front as well. So yeah. That's a big part of the session as well.
Yeah. I wanted to back up the vSphere Update Manager. Earlier versions of that before it was in vSAN, not exactly the easiest thing to configure. And a lot of manual steps, having to upload your own ISOs, having to really manage it. But then obviously, then you have to go and patch vSAN as well. So the fact that came out greatly simplified. So, and you're saying that there's more enhancements to that now?
Well, yeah, because today you just have... the firmware patching is done through ConfigAssist still, and the drivers, you can do drivers in VUM, but it's just drivers for the controller. It's not NICs, it's not the motherboard, it's not all the other components.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when we looked at, we actually came to this with an open mind. More than a year ago, like a year and a half ago, we looked at the spectrum and said, we need to have a kick-ass solution.
Yeah.
Well, what do we have? We have VUM. Is it our solution? And we looked at it, and we actually saw a lot of strength in VUM. It's a really solid engine.
Oh, yeah.
It just wasn't built for simplicity. And so, you know, the answer was simple. Well, let's build in the simplicity. You know, make it HCL aware, make it aware of, you know, what versions are out there and more easily configure that, because we actually have a good recommendation of which patch level you should be at given your hardware and your setup.
Yep.
And so just automate all the steps because we can. And so why not? And, make it just easy to use and have this really solid, scalable engine in the back end.
And having every single customer go through that same experience of, okay, I've got this controller, what's the driver, what's the firmware, go manually download it. I mean, if we can, the ultimate goal is to get rid of all of those steps.
Oh, yeah. And it also takes the guessing out, because you know that when you download, you know, when it automatically downloads the updates that are available for your system, you know you're not going to be...
It's the one the Ready Labs guys have tested and beat up and made sure works.
I mean, this is basically my philosophy, right? Every time I need to explain to somebody how to do something, it means that should go away, because he shouldn't have to actually think about this.
Yeah.
And so just every year do that, and you eventually come out with something really, really powerful.
Nice.
Thinking back to my conversations with customers 2 years ago, I think half of my conversations involved around how to configure a RAID controller and pass through and what driver and firmware. And now as these things are, now I just say, oh yeah, just go use ConfigAssist, have it push the updates. You know, it's removing that thought. It makes it to where our conversations are about much more higher level, much more valuable things.
And that's ultimately, like, we're doing vSAN, but I'm not even a storage person per se, right? But what I saw was that when we did our internal R&D cloud, storage was the biggest problem. It was number one and number two problem in our setup. So By doing a kick-ass storage and doing it really simple, we can now take the whole setup and make it even simpler. And so, you know, to me, vSAN is what pays the bill. But what I get to really do is enhance the full experience. And ultimately, that's what the big price is, right? That's where, you know, customers want a private cloud that's super easy to set up and manage.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, just, you know, they want to invest their dollars somewhere else. So we need to deliver that, and I think that's exactly what we're doing. You know, chopping away at all the things that people do every day, and that might not always be sexy, but it's the stuff that actually costs you time and costs you money.
Nice.
We're moved towards that future of you just push the button, yell YOLO in the data center, and everything magically gets where it needs to go. So,
right.
So what's the gap now? What do you think? Obviously, you're not making an announcement, but what's on your mind about what should be like the next focus for vSAN to make it simpler?
Well, I think we've articulated this mission, and I think it's mostly staying the same overall. I think it's lifecycle, right? There's a lot more we can do on lifecycle. as I said, we're now tackling firmware in a deep level. We've already tackled ESX quite well. We need to tackle VC, NSX. We realize the full stack even more.
Yeah.
You see us do Cloud Foundation, which is a great way of, you know, upping the whole bomb, like the full setup. Now, how do we bridge this? How do we take this Cloud Foundation concept where you have the ability to patch everything and bring in some of the customization that enterprise customers want? And how do you marry these? So, for example, we are running a design workshop here to understand from customers what they want to customize and where they want to go to a simple model. And, you know, what's the trade-off that really works for customers? So just going all the way to the simplistic model is probably not going to work, at least not initially. We need to find a way to, you know, go from a very customized setup and slowly get people to not have to worry. So lifecycle is one big area.
Yeah, sure.
And I think there's multiple years of more things to do to just make it really push button, because we keep extending the definition of what we're lifecycling and trying to make simple. The other big area is day two operations around, you know, performance management, troubleshooting, and
support.
Right, and support is part of that. So
yeah,
you know, for the last 3 years we've been on this, starting with vSAN Health. We want to extend that to be something like vSphere Health, maybe.
It kind of already is there.
It already is.
If you look at the vSAN Health checks, I mean, a lot of this stuff, is vMotion working?
You know,
is that a vSAN thing? You got to think holistically about it. So
exactly. So vSAN Health, we started it with vSAN because we saw the immediate need, but it's really a concept that
if NTP isn't configured, that's bad for everyone.
Right.
You know.
And so, you know, we're looking at both the direct customers facing interfaces and what he needs, but also what our support team needs and what we can do there.
Right.
And, you know, now we are running our own cloud, right? I mean, it's the Amazon cloud running our software. So
exactly.
But we are managing it. So we need to really be front and center of dealing with all the problems that occur. And so we need those kind of toolings even for ourselves. So, you know, we're investing heavily in this area, not just the vSAN team, but overall VMware, as we're, you know, going into this journey.
That's awesome. Yeah, like I think I saw that thing that John was showing me, something called, I think it was called Humbug. I think that was the name, which is a strange name. It's like, Humbug. But
that is not an official product name.
Yeah, it's unofficial, and this is an unofficial podcast. So
yeah, I love code names at VMware. Why didn't you choose a car? You know,
But what is this Humbug thing?
Right. By the way, on code names, this is not even a fancy code name. This is one of our engineers 5 years ago came up with a name for a tool, and we've been extending it ever since and making it more and more powerful. So it just stuck. It's a brand name internally. So
I like it.
We've used it. But I think externally, think about it this way. We have just launched at VMworld Skyline, right? A support initiative where we want to transform how to do proactive support. Transforming the support experience, where we might go all the way to not just understanding your environment, but calling you when something goes wrong, when you don't have something configured to be ideal from a risk management perspective. So under that umbrella, we want to basically take the capabilities that we have in vSAN analytics, which is, you know, rich understanding of vSAN, what's the configuration, what's the runtime status, what are possible problems, all the vSAN Health, all the performance analytics that we launched in 6.6.1, and basically bring that over and say, our support team has full access to all these capabilities on a both reactive and proactive basis. So when a customer calls us, you know, let's use all this information that we have and all this understanding that we have to make it much, much easier for the customer, for the support engineer to help the customer.
They can start triaging immediately rather than waiting on logs.
And, yeah, as opposed to collecting logs.
And so now we can triage immediately when the customer calls us. But then, you know, in the vision, and that's what Skyline is also about, is, well, we can actually start triaging before the customer calls, before the customer
even
realizes.
Let's try to drive towards no two customers ever having the same problem in the end game, I guess.
Like, just to give you an example, one of our internal clouds at VMware, we found one cluster that had latencies that didn't seem right. And they hadn't noticed. They had no idea. Their customers hadn't noticed. They probably just thought, well, you know, it is what it is.
It's the network.
It's the ghost on the ghost in the system.
Right. Yeah. And so nobody complained, and we found it. We found that vSAN was slow, but as in any good example, it wasn't vSAN that was actually the problem. It was the network.
It's always the network.
It's always the network, right? So we found that the networking was slow. TCP was having errors. There were no drops in ESX. But we found, well, one network card was 1G instead of 10G.
Oh, my goodness.
So we called them up. They looked at it. They found out, oh, just a simple hardware reset fixed the issue. It was a hardware problem. And, you know, everything was up and running with, you know, 5x improved latency. So that's the sort of stuff that we want to do because we have all this information. We know about this.
All the information is there.
Right. And so what our customers tell us is, sure, like, just let us know what you know. And so I think that's a really a big transformation. And Skyline is the public-facing term for this, right? This is the umbrella where all these capabilities for all the different products are folding into. And from our side, it's the vSAN analytics capabilities that are powering this Skyline aspect. And you know, this is not something that is launched here, right? The vSAN capabilities. This is something we're thinking about. We're demoing as ideas, but this is something we're thinking about to really aggressively pursue.
Yeah, the fear you always hear, I mean, traditionally is like, oh, I don't want to share my data. You know, we're a three-letter organization. We're not allowed to share data, but this is not data, right?
Right. So we couldn't care less about the actual personally identifiable information that customers have, right? What we care about is how many hosts you have. Do you have DDoS enabled? What's your latency like? We
don't care. No host names, no IP names, right. No Macs, no WBN.
What network card are you using?
Right. Like, we care about the vendor of your network card. We don't care about anything else, really. So I think that's the key, that what we collect is actually non-sensitive. And when we talk to customers, they agree, yeah, this is not sensitive. And so by making that clear of what we're collecting and why we're collecting it and what, most importantly, what value we are providing.
Sure.
Right. It's not about us wanting to have data.
Sure.
It's about us wanting to offer a service, wanting to offer a better experience. And that's really what we need to emphasize. And it's also what we internally need to focus on, right? We want to deliver value. And the cloud is now one popular way. And it's a very powerful way because we can now iterate. You know, traditionally, we needed many, many months to release a new feature. Then the customer takes many months to install it, and then he realizes the value. Now we can see a problem, build something, put it live immediately, and all the customers out there immediately get the benefit. So that's a very powerful model for software delivery, and it allows us to experiment, to learn much, much quicker. So I think at the end, the customer benefits greatly.
Always good to hear from Mr. Christian Dickman with two N's. That was fun. I do love the part where he talks about how, you know, being in the division where they're actually working on future releases, you know, that's got to be frustrating. Always, you know, you work on this really cool stuff, you come up with a design, you troubleshoot it, you do all this, you finally release it, and then guys like Pete and John talk about it.
Yes. Thunder Stealers. That's our job title.
Yeah, Thunder Stealers. I like it. But yeah, he was great. If you haven't seen his sessions, I highly recommend them. Probably one of my favorite sessions at VMworld are usually Christian Dickman's, because he talks about what's coming, but and then the next year you see, like last year when it was the first time I saw his session, and everything that he delivered, as we mentioned in the conversation, you know, made the truck for this last release of vSAN. So very cool. I think he has a pretty cool job. Looking forward to talking to him some more in the future about some future programs that we're not allowed to mention.
Yeah, it's great seeing stuff actually ship, because I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've been in these forward-looking presentations and it's like, and 5 years later, we're still waiting on whatever it was. But yeah. No, it's everything shipped. So we'll see for next year.
Absolutely. So a couple of things before we close, worth mention, and we're going to try and get Alan Renouf on soon to talk about it, but great keynote on day one. If you haven't seen it, Google VMworld 2017 day one keynote. The whole thing was great, but towards the end, our good friend, Mr. Alan Renouf, got a chance to come and demonstrate his little pet project that he did for a hackathon, where he, in a day and a half, wrote some VR software to manage a virtual data center, which I thought was pretty amazing. Did you see it, John?
It's been fun watching various storage vendors kind of play around with, like, oh, look, we can control an array with, Alexa, which I shouldn't say too loud, because now the one on my desk is going to, I don't know, try to call in robot reinforcements. Alexa, tell me a riddle. Anyways, so the, just kidding. Stop. Because the
Oh, that's classic.
Okay, so now that Alexa's ordered me a sandwich or God knows what, it's been interesting watching these storage vendors play with Alexa and be like, hey, look, like, you can check the health of my array, or I can create a LUN, you know, with the voice control,
yeah,
which actually is kind of terrifying. But it was exciting to see Pat, you know, in full Matrix mode with his VR headset on,
yeah,
throwing VMs between private and public clouds, you know, invoking, you know, auto expansion of cloud. You know, it was just, yeah. Again, yeah. Everyone else is playing with children's toys. Pat is in the Matrix. That yeah. is, everyone should go watch the video.
Pat's live migrating VMs by tossing them into the clouds, which I thought was awesome.
He did throw one away, though. But I mean, he intended to. So
yeah, yeah. And the crazy part is, you know, you look at that interface, freaking Alan created that in a day and a half. Him and his team, you know, Alan and William and a couple of other guys, they actually created that for a hackathon in a day and a half, which blows my mind, those guys.
Wait, that was the hackathon from the U.S.? That's where that came from? Wow. Yeah. Go watch the video, guys.
Yeah, for sure. They did that in a hackathon, and then it actually became the keynote in Barcelona. So pretty amazing stuff. Speaking of William Lamb, if you haven't seen any VMworld session, you want to see it. William was up to his tricks again, created on GitHub/LambW. You can see the VMworld 2017. Every session that you want is now aggregated, and you can just click on it and see any session you want, which I thought was pretty awesome. Hats off to William. All right, last thing before we go, just a huge thank you to all the folks that we met in Vegas and in Barcelona. John and I we had so much fun meeting everybody and talking to everybody and just geeking out. Hopefully for those of you that were there, you ended up getting a t-shirt or some swag of some sort. And we really appreciate the conversations, the feedback, the input. If you didn't get a chance to hook up with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. We'd love to hear what you think. We'd love to hear some feedback from you guys, maybe some suggestions on future shows. But yeah, most importantly, we just love to hear from you. So thank you again for all the support. And we're going to leave you guys this week with the group that actually played at the Barcelona Appreciation Party, and that is the Kaiser Chiefs, who I am now a new fan of. So with that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. Subscribe to the podcast at vspeakingpodcast.com. And until next week, bye for now.
Is that Duncan stage diving?
See. Oh, yeah. See.
Chief is right.
I am profoundly dumbfounded.
Enough of this jibber jabber.